First of all, before we even get to the podcast, I'm staring at your name here. Followed you for a while. Love your stuff. We're going to get into all that. But can you give me a name pronunciation that we absolutely should have done before we got on the podcast?
So the white version is Edin Sahovic. The way that I was like given, my background, my heritage, I don't really talk about much because it's usually a can of worms I don't want to open up. But I have a Bosnian background, which is in Eastern Europe. Anyway, there was a little bit of political problems there. So, but my name pronunciation is Edin Šehović. Most of the people that are from that neck of the woods, whether Bosnian, Serbian, Croatian, doesn't matter. I have no issues with that, by the way. People are like, oh my God, how do you feel about it? I don't feel any type of way about it, which is why I don't talk about it. But they know right away. My name is very like stereotypical Bosnian, even though most people here have never heard of it.
There's only one Bosnian person I can name, and that's Edin Džeko. And so Edin, we could have just went from there and have no, you know, listen, familiar to on a very like singular level on what goes on there politically in the world, but big soccer fan.
And you don't need to be.
Right.
But how many people even know who he is? You know what I mean? I'm like, that's usually, I don't know how many Americans even watch soccer. You know what I mean? So I'm like, damn. I mean, they call it soccer. They would never call it that, you know, in Europe. But Edin Džeko is, he's another famous Edin. I think he's definitely way more famous than me, though.
Do you ever travel back there? You have family back there? Your parents are first generation, came over, you're Canadian?
Yes. So I'm actually born in Canada, to make things a lot easier for people. I'm born in Canada, although my second language is English. I'm born in Canada and I do, like, I haven't gone back in a while. I will be going to Croatia this year and Bosnia. You know what? I can speak pretty confidently. I know Jesse, my girlfriend, doesn't watch any of my shit, so I can talk freely. Which, by the way, can I curse on this?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're good.
I'll be sure to tone it down. But yeah, I'll be taking her to see the motherland for a little bit of a trip here this year. But I don't get to go back as often as I'd like because I'm traveling for other stuff, and then you're tired, you know. So, but I don't have too much family back home. I do have family, but not. Yeah, Bosnian. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's not slightly different. There's obviously in Bosnia they speak Bosnian, but the region speaks obviously multiple languages: Croatian, Serbian. Obviously,
Yeah, they're all very similar though. Yeah. As I grew up hearing all the time from my dad, it's all the same shit, different pile. So, true. It's slightly different. The way I would equate it is technically there are different languages. That is true, but it is more similar to how you would say Aussie English versus Americanized English. Like, there's differences in some ways you would set up some sentences, sentence structure, and so on. But then there's also different word choices for different things. But like, for example, in US, you would never hear someone say taking the piss, but that's like a normal way of speaking in maybe Australia or even the UK. So that's how I would like to make it easier for people, is like, I can understand quite a bit of or everything that like a Croat or like a Serbian might talk about. We can understand each other, no problem.
How does that side of your, just you and your upbringing and your family and your inner circle affected, things are just different there. Things are different in all different parts of the world, by the way, but my family are from the Netherlands and we speak Dutch. My family many of them still living there. And that has impacted me in some ways of just how I look at, you know, the world, but also how I look at exercise and nutrition. And do you find that you look at it more through like a westernized lens, or do you feel like there's still some of, or just what do people, the way like people in your family look at how you maybe approach nutrition and fitness, and you're way more jacked and take fitness maybe more seriously than they do over there? Is any of that kind of come through in your life?
Oh my gosh, that's like a whole interesting can of worms. I've actually never talked about that on a podcast or even maybe in a video, but massive impact. So your upbringing, cultural, social, geographical, I think it has such a massive impact on how you eat, how you view fitness, as you said. But like a big issue for me is like growing up, I don't want to say my parents always supported me. So I'm going to preface this in saying my parents always supported anything I wanted to choose to do, as long as I wasn't, you know, trying to hurt someone or myself. And then in those things, they drastically did not support. They were very clear on that. But no, they would support everything. But there was always comments made about you said you're more jacked. Maybe now I was always like a super skinny kid. But growing up as I was like gaining that weight, I went in my freshman year, as the US call it, in my first year of uni, I gained 50 pounds. So obviously not all muscle, but a substantial amount of muscle. And so I looked very different from when I started uni, and that definitely is, the freshman 15. Yeah, it's a lot of weight. So for those watching, that's like 22 kg in 1 year, which is pretty nuts. Or about 20, 22 kg. But yeah, so it's always been a lot of my parents going like, "Oh, you're ruining your body. You're making yourself look gross, this and that." Like they wouldn't feel bad about saying comments like that. And again, my parents love me. They don't say these things anymore. They know it's not really helpful. They know it's not going to change anything. They're learning a little bit more with the times, but yeah, it made learning. They also had a little bit more in Europe. They have a little bit more of an appeal to nature going on, which happens everywhere, but it's quite strong. It's quite prevalent in Europe because that's all they have with their food. They're very foodie places in Europe, even in the Netherlands, right? It's the same there, but everyone wants what they do to be the most special thing. And so you always tend to fight that when, going through education and dietetics. I have a background in dietetics. So when I was getting that education, it's like if I were to fight back and be like, yeah, well, diet soda, for example, that was a big problem with me growing up with type 1 diabetes. It was like my parents got around to it, but they didn't want me to consume diet soda. And for me, I'm like, okay, so it wasn't even about weight gain or loss at the time. I was very skinny. It was about insulin or not. And so I was always like, okay, don't take insulin and still drink soda. That sounds like a win-win. And so, but my parents were like kind of anti. And anyone in their social circle was also, they kind of viewed things the same way. So, and the grandparents as well, before they passed, they were also the same way. They were like, they don't know these diseases, but they know the natural way is the right way. So yeah, it definitely came with a lot of hurdles, I would say, in becoming who I am. But you asked the original question was how do I view it and like through what lens? I kind of have a hybrid lens because I don't really feel like I fit in the Western society, but I also feel like I don't fit in very well back home, if you want to call it that. I mean, home is Canada for me. I'm Canadian. I am, my heritage is Canadian. I just have a ethnic background, maybe that's slightly different, or my parents are geographically from somewhere else, but I am Canadian, despite the fact that in many ways I don't feel like I fit in here, and I don't feel like I fit in over there either. So it's a tough, tough place to be, but it is what it is. I'm myself, and I'm now thankfully fairly confident in who I am.
Well, you can. Oh, we have a safe word here, and safe word's watermelon, and we just move on from a topic. But if you wouldn't mind, like, what makes you feel like you don't perfectly, or listen, the idea that you should perfectly fit in somewhere is a philosophical line of questioning we don't need to go down.
Yeah.
But we can would love to
No,
poke
I
around
love
if
it.
you would be open to talking about what makes you feel like maybe you're not, perfectly fitting in where you're at.
Yeah, no. Wow, it's free therapy. I mean, look, because I don't really agree with the idea. Like, obviously, typically, I agree with the idea that natural is better, like 70% of the time. If you consume a whole food diet, or say 80% of the time, I guess in that case, if you consume a whole food diet, obviously that's going to be better for you. The less processed it is, the better for you. But that doesn't mean that it's, processed equals bad. As you know, it's a common theme on both of our pages and both of our content. So I view it in that kind of lens. I'm not very binary in any sense, but in by doing so, by not being like firmly rooted to any one decision, it kind of creates indecision or indecisiveness, or it seems that way, right? So because I'm not like firmly like rooted to any one belief system, I'm not, pulling to either side more than the other. And by virtue of that, you're kind of somewhere in the middle, which is not too much European, not too much Canadian. And then also like there's many things I personally think the European way is to not to say not work, but they're very chill. They're very laid back. They work to live, not live to work, is kind of how we say it generally. And I think there's something to loving what you do to like I love what I do to work. Like when I work, I love working. I feel like I can't just work just enough and then go maybe have a coffee, go do whatever. So I really don't agree with that mode of thinking either, or that school of thought. So for me, obviously that's a very privileged take that you can love what you do and you love your job, but not everyone can have that. But I do, and I think, I love to work hard. I work for everything I got, and then, I kind of find myself falling even in that regard somewhere in between. Like, I don't think you just need to work yourself to the bone, and you need to find that balance. But and balance looks different for everyone, as you kind of alluded to. All these are all like philosophical questions that everyone has to ask themselves. But yeah, for me, that's kind of why there's many ways in which I'm like not fully to one side, not fully to the other side. I'm kind of right in the middle, and that's what makes me. But also that is what makes me maybe not one and not the other at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's just comes down to it's easier to be dogmatic, and dogmatic seems like an inherently negative word, and it might be, but what we're saying is that just it's if you appeal to nature always, that's probably just easier to have rules. It's easier to just have a rule of okay, natural is better, closer to Mother Earth, closer to what our ancestors did. All of that on a spectrum is better. Further we get from that is always worse. And it's easier, it's less in intellectually demanding to take up that position. And I think that, by the way, is a large reason why people will do it. Because like, ah, it's a super easy way of thinking. It's not an, it's not a, it's not like the happiest way to go through life, but it is the least. Like the least, you don't have
Friction.
to challenge your own beliefs as much. You can just, hey, all right, this is my belief. And I just, even if you bring evidence and nuance, and I'm just going to not engage with that because it's too hard for me to kind of go from extreme to more nuanced and contextual and have to take things on a context by context basis and look at the evidence. That's too challenging. I'm just going to, appeal to nature and take it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That and to some people it may seem I mentioned earlier, it kind of seems like indecision, right? Like even my brother is a little bit more of like a just get shit done kind of guy. And when I start saying, he asks a question, like maybe he's looking at something in the supplement space with business or whatever, and he'll ask a question and I'll right away go, well, depends. I think the moment he hears that, he like cringes on the inside and just like wants to hang up the call immediately. Or anyone really in that's in a business kind of position like that. It's like, okay, just edit and tell me the answer that I want. So yeah, that's a I'm very much a critical thinker in to a fault, much like many people in our space are. And I think, that's something I w want to improve upon. I think sometimes it is a waste of energy in some contexts, but not that I have any specific examples, but yeah, to your point, it's the idea, like I like to save my energy in other ways. Like I have very simple outfits and I wear very limited clothing. I'm not changing things up, and that's why I won't waste my energy and my brain capacity on thinking on what outfit I'm gonna wear or how I'm gonna, what meals I'm gonna have. I save my energy there, whereas other people save their energy on, these ways of thinking. So I respect it either way, right? You can't hate on someone for doing that. It's just who they are as a person. They don't want to waste their time on that, so it's fine.
Yeah, as a Canadian, first of all, I love Canada. Absolutely love Canada. I've had nothing but wonderful times in the Canadian Rockies, in Vancouver, in Toronto, Montreal. I mean, I'm sure there's more to Canada than just those places, but the times I've been in Canada have just been wonderful. As a Canadian, how much like we have a public health shitstorm going on right now. I mean, it's I'm not I don't want to throw oh everything's in the toilet, everything's terrible here. Don't want to do that, but like we're in a man, that I would love to, and love to is the wrong phrasing, but in a weird parallel universe, read the history books about what's going on right now in 30, 40, 50 years about what will be in a history book about this. And I just saw something really terrifying about something in Oklahoma. Anyway, you're a Canadian, you're not from here. Do you give a shit about what's going on here? Does it impact you? How much do you care about, oh, RFK is getting Coca-Cola to go back to sugar and to cane sugar? Like, do you care? Does that impact you at all? Like, does it, like, it is a something that's on my mind many times per day, which is either from a I'm scrolling on social media and I have something that I have a visceral reaction to that I'm frustrated about, a conversation with a family member, a conversation with a client, a friend, content I'm making, it's an important part of my life and it's caused me, I don't want to say it's been like crippling with stress, but it has
Cause stress
maybe
for
for the first
sure.
time in my adult life, and maybe this is not like a I don't know how this will come out, but maybe for the first time in my life has made me feel Yeah, just really sad. Really, A, really privileged, and B, really just sad about where we're headed, and maybe not as, into the political public health landscape as I probably should have been. And I'm open to admitting that. But how much do you care? How much does it affect you up there?
Well, I mean, definitively, I think less than it would affect you guys. Uniquely, it affects me probably more so than the average Canadian. Obviously, there's some, geopolitical things that might impact financials of people here for sure. People like to comment on it because we definitely do still hear about it through broadcasting and whatever. But because I'm on social media, because I am in the position that I'm in, it comes with a territory that I have to, despite the fact that it might never impact me per se, like the actual healthcare situation will likely never impact me directly. But, a lot of my clients, it'll impact them, or a lot of my followers, a majority of my following is US. So I think it's very important for my messaging that I choose. If I'm choosing to create content that speaks to 60 or 55 to 60% Americans, it's important that it's relatable to them, whilst also trying to not be, ghosting out the rest of my following. But it's just the way that it is, and it's kind of top of mind for a lot of folks. So they're, they're tagging me in a lot more stuff from RFK, and I try not to, mainly because I feel many different ways. So I'll divulge down like a little bit of a rabbit hole here, and then if it gets annoying, you guys can always cut it out. But there's two things that I think are really interesting about this. One, I don't remember what year it was, but it was when we were quite young. Like I think I was a teenager. I mean, I'm 30 years old. I'm a 1995, so I think we're similar in age,
Yeah, I'm
ballpark.
33. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So when we would have been maybe young teens or like kids, the cereal brands actually did pull out food coloring. I don't know if you remember this, but there was a short period of time where they did remove food coloring, which is like this whole push. Like obviously there's the seed oil debate and whatever. And the food coloring one is the one that makes me laugh the most though, because they literally did this by choice. And what ended up happening is the Canadians kept it without food coloring because the sales were still okay. They were untarnished. But in the US, the sales went down dramatically. So, what did they do? Is they re reintroduced the coloring because clearly Americans cared about the color of the food that they were consuming, most namely Fruit Loops. And so, that is why Canadians have a different color of Fruit Loops from the American one. It is not because someone is trying to harm you or whatever, it is a simple business decision made back in the day to display two different demographics, right? While Canadians and Americans are truly like the same shit, different pile, but they are still different. No matter how you want to cook it, no matter whether I want to admit it or not, like we sound the same, but we do clearly have different buying habits. So that was one thing that I thought it was like really funny when that kind of like whole like people had a very like short view on that, I guess, or very like the narrow lens. They were looking at it through like a narrow-minded lens, which was crazy to me. It's not about being poisoned, but hey, people want to have their conspiracy theories. The other thing that I think about this is like, yeah, I really with healthcare, I struggle with it a lot because talking about it, the US, specifically US healthcare. I don't struggle with talking about healthcare topics, and I don't struggle with having debates with people. In fact, I've angered the vegans today. So they're all coming after me, making posts and whatever, and
All right.
tagging me, which is great. I think it's great when it's like there's a few that are like genuinely good discussion. They have great points, and I'm all for the vegan movement, by the way. I'm not like against it. I think, if you have something you're passionate about, that's great. But just like let's talk about real facts. And so if you can talk about real facts, which with a vegan diet, you totally can. But I'm moving past that. The healthcare, talking about healthcare is like, when people criticize they say, oh, well, who are you to give healthcare advice? And it's someone who's like a little bit heavier. That's kind of how I feel giving advice to Americans on healthcare, being the Canadian. It's like, oh, who the hell are you to talk about this? You're not even affected by it. So I don't want to feel tone deaf in or seem tone deaf to people. despite the fact that there are some very clear, unless it's like very clear, like guys, you're just being stupid, then I tend to not make comments on it. But if it's like a very clear, like super easily explainable thing, like the color in Cheerios or the seed oil debate, if you want to call it that, which people still want to have, yeah, those are the only times when I'll really like jump in when its impact is massive in the amount of misinformation it spreads.
Yeah, I don't think what's hap the changes that are what I want to be careful with the words. I want to be intentional with what I'm saying. I
Sure,
think that
sure.
the so let's take RFK and let's take some of the things that are happening. Let's say and I think that one of the things that our country on an individual lacks from individual perspective lacks is the understanding of what's called opportunity cost, which is like each
Yeah.
decision is also simultaneously a decision to not make a different decision. And so if
Yeah.
there are a finite amount of resources and you choose to do X,
Yes.
that means you're also choosing not to do Y. And so when we look at things like, getting Coca-Cola to switch back to cane sugar, or we get, and ironically, there's an assumption here that these are all good changes and that the only downside is that we're not making other better changes. But the sad part is some of these changes are just not even good changes, like having
Yeah. Yeah.
Making a push for fast food companies to switch to beef tallow or Coca-Cola to go back to sugar. Like these are benign net either net
Neutral.
neutral slash
Neutral.
neutral to
Yeah.
negative, frankly. If you'd ask me if
Yeah.
somebody, company switching from canola to tallow is a positive, I'd say it's easier time arguing that that's a negative, but I would still call it roughly neutral because the biggest issue is calories in fast food. My point is things that are happening in this country from a, in my in my country in the United States are, and
Sure.
the reason I ask you is because, like, whether or not you live in the United States, it is a macrocosm of what you deal with from a client level, I'm sure, on an individual, like from an individual level,
Yeah.
where it's a misunderstanding of what people should focus on. And on an individual level, we have an opportunity cost of the finite cognitive resources and financial resources that people, individuals have. So you might be working with a client who is thinking now that beef tallow is healthy, right? Or that sugar is better
And
than
guess what they're going to do more of? They're
right.
going to
And
start consuming more
totally.
of it.
So
Exactly.
whether or
Yeah.
not you're in the United States, these changes are representative of things that people struggle with and now will struggle with more, seeing as they might look at this as an affirmation of those beliefs, naturalist fallacies, this just a misunderstanding of the hierarchy of what's important. And so I do think that whether you're from the United States or not, you might not be like, hey, I'm up in arms about what's happening to this country. I might be like, hey, here's a let's use this. Let's say I was not from this country, but hey, let's use what's happening here to have a discussion around, misunderstanding of the, what's most important when it comes to nutrition, because that is what's happening here. We are like, hey, what or what's the misunderstanding of what's most important when it comes to health? Like, if we are like actually trying to make America healthy again, and you're somebody who doesn't know anything, and you're seeing where the priorities are right now, you might be thinking, oh, cool, for me to get healthy, I really got to buckle down on that ingredient list. It's like,
Yeah.
that's the information you're getting from the top right now, that that's the most important thing. We have people outside picket signs, avoid the food dyes. Like, when in reality,
Yeah.
like the it's a I didn't even know that we would go down this route right now, and I do want to
No, I
do
love it. I love
is
it.
there. Is there anything on that you want to talk about? Because I do want to make sure we have a discussion about your diabetes.
No, you're all good, dude. I think this is awesome. Don't cut it. I think it's
Oh,
good
I'm not cutting anything.
to
We
keep
don't cut
this.
things. We're not
Yeah,
cutting anything.
it's good to keep this going because I have no watermelon here. There's no watermelon here. So I don't need a safe word to talk about anything. If I don't want to talk about it, I just will not. So no, the thing that I think is that needs to be said, and I think I'm somewhat diplomatic in the way that I address things online, even right now, but I'm unfortunately quite blunt also, which maybe comes across that I'm like this big anti-RFK, which is not the case. I think that people just need to understand that I don't think that the intention is that, by RFK is to not be, making healthier changes. When they say make America healthy again, I genuinely believe that they believe that. Like, I'm not sitting here saying that they don't believe that. But to your point, they're utilizing resources, most notably time. If you want to say, oh, they're paid the same amount, whatever, like, sure, but they're using their time focusing on this, and that's a resource, and their bureaucracy, they're using all of these people's time that they're paid for to go now hunt for, or to go make calls all day long to Coca-Cola to make the change to cane sugar. Well, the irony of that decision is that's net neutral in a vacuum. But in an economic level, on an economic level, the US produces corn, which is why high fructose corn syrup is always on American labels and not the British, the Mexican, whatever, because there are economic reasons for why they choose certain ingredients also. So corn, we produce a lot of, and if we can create, the same sucrose glucose combination for something that we produce in-house, we being Americans in this case, if we can do that, then that means we can create the same product that everyone loves for cheaper, making it more accessible for people, making more people want to buy it. And as a business decision, that makes so much sense. And then for a consumer, that makes so much sense too, because you're like, cool, I'm getting Coke for, call it a dollar, just for simple math. Next week, when they change, you're inevitably going to be paying for now an import tax because that product now contains cane sugar, which sure, the US can probably produce a little bit of, but not enough that they can mass produce how much Coca-Cola people are drinking. Therefore, now Coke goes from a dollar to a dollar 50. And that is the rough scale of the cost difference. And that may not seem significant on one Coke, but if you consume at one a week, that's going to be a substantial change to your grocery bill. And most people don't. They consume a lot more than that. So that's kind of what I'm trying to say here is like, and you're trying to like, we're echoing the same point here. And I don't want to sound like just a, beating a dead horse, but it you are every decision and indecision has an outcome as a result of it. I don't think the intention is wrong, but there is a difference between intention and outcome. And so the intention is to make America healthier again. What I see this as is a massive waste of money, a massive waste of time, and it could be better used to create more affordable food options for people. Invest in, I'm not a politician, so I'm not going to make all the right things and I'm not going to make all the right suggestions. I'm also not an economist, which are very important in this, right? Like, will it be easier to tax sugars or will it be more effective to maybe subsidize canned vegetables and fruits or frozen vegetables and fruits or subsidize producers in some way? Like, what's more effective? I personally don't know because I'm not an economist, but those are the questions we should be asking to try to make the foods that everyone agrees across the board are healthier for you. Let's try to make those more accessible to food deserts, which people act like, oh, that's just, Arizona and fucking Nevada. No, it's not. It's actually a large amount of the US and in our case, Canada too. Like, just imagine those, film situations of the Inuit or these people high up in Alaska or in Canada and the Northwest Territories. These villages exist. They're not like massive, but you have to take planes to bring produce or to bring anything there, grocery wise, right? So an Amazon delivery has to come by plane. So while it's not a majority of our population, you can't disregard 200,000 people. They still have a very important job. There's scientists that work up there in the Arctic. There are all of these different things that are very important for global warming, for whatever else you want to say, whatever their jobs are. These people are important. Every person is important. And so I think it's important to understand that, like, even canned food, it's probably not the best thing because they're heavy now to bring on a plane. So in those specific scenarios, maybe it's not a better option, but trying to think of these ways to bring these produce, because when you bring a friend of mine used to live in Nunavut, which is like the tippity top of Canada, it's like when you think of frozen tundra, nothing grows there and whatever. So she would get she would be a teacher she was a teacher there, right? And salary of a teacher, not very high. So she would pay like $13 Canadian, but still that's like $10 American for a thing of lettuce or sorry, for a thing of spinach, and most of it's already wilted. Like the in the grocery store, it's already wilted. So those are things that, it kind of goes back to, I don't remember how you phrased it earlier, but one of the things I wish people could do, and unfortunately social media gives you curated imagery, but that's why I wish it's so important to travel. I wish if people could afford to do so, obviously that's a very privileged thing to say, but I think travel is the most valuable experience that any person can have. It is going somewhere, seeing how someone else lives. It doesn't matter if it's the town next door, the two states over, it's seeing how people live and how their lived experience is different from yours. So yeah, and like even if I didn't see that friend of mine, like that was eye-opening. Right, seeing her Instagram stories. Not everyone has a friend that moves to Nunavut, though. So, it's kind of yeah. I think travel is and something I'm insanely grateful for. And that's probably, it goes back to my whole like how you view things. If I didn't get to travel as much as a kid, would I be as empathetic as I am? Probably not. Probably not realistically, but it helps.
I wonder where the, like you had mentioned, that the intent is likely good, that these are people that really believe that this is what's going to make a difference.
I believe so, at least.
No,
Who
I
knows?
wasn't.
I
I
could
want
be
to have
wrong
that
on
belief
that.
too. I'm not, and I'm not like, it's just that might be a interesting discussion to have. But I also just am curious. This is the, these are just like the same people who are at their core super duper fear-mongery to against ultra-processed foods, and yet they're like in the entire focus is like making ultra-processed foods marginally more healthy, and they're not even doing that, but let's assume that they were doing that. It feels icky that if you pulled any of these people aside, prior to this administration where they got, and I'm thinking of people like the Food Babe, Max Lugavere, some people that have been propped up now due to this administration. If you pull them to the side at any point before they got this big bump in notoriety and said, what'd be the most important thing for people to focus on? They'd be like, oh, eating a lot more whole foods, a lot more fruits and vegetables, like, less ultra processed foods. And then now, hey, where's the vast majority of our time, money, energy being put towards? And it's like micromanaging ingredients on ultra processed foods. And that to me, just where did that switch happen for somebody? Again, in the cold hard light of day, if it's like, hey, we have finite amount of resources, should we spend them on, kind of like a gentleman's agreement with Hershey's to get rid of, by the way, not just get not get rid of dyes, but find new dyes, which we have no idea if they will be better or worse or the same. We don't even know
They'll
if the
taste
dyes that they
different.
are getting rid of are bad. And so we don't know if those are bad. Frankly, we do not know that. Actually, much easier to say that they are not bad. Let's say they are bad. We have no idea that the new dyes are good. My point is, what are we talking about? Everybody would agree. We need to eat more fruits and vegetables, whole foods, legumes, nuts, seeds, lean meats, fish, whatever. I'm just not seeing that in the rhetoric among people in power right now. And I'm just that I'm just curious, when did that, I'm not asking you that, by the way. I'm just
No,
noting that it's disappointing that I think these were, again, if you look at those people's pages 2, 3 years ago, what they were preaching was ultra processed foods are bad. They were like pro eating off a cutting board style. You got to eat whole foods. Everything's got to be organic, grass fed. And now they're like, we're pumped that Red 39 will now be, or that we're going to use beta carotene, and beta carotene sounds like it's good for you. And so this is going to be such a big win instead of Red 40. And I listen, if you could snap your fingers and you can get out all dyes out of food, because I will say they're non-nutritive, right? They don't, no, non-nutritive means something slightly different, but they're not providing some sort of nutritional value. They are there strictly for
I would
sensory
go so
purposes.
far as to say they're kind of, I don't want, they're actually not even useless to your point about sensory. They can increase the, perceived enjoyment of the food. So for certain populations, but for the vast majority of people, not to discredit everyone's experience, but for the vast majority of people, they are nutritionally
I just would have
useless.
taken, I would have, if you had told me, hey, we're gonna get the fear-mongering ultra processed food side of MAGA, like I'll take it, or MAHA, whatever, I'll take it. This just isn't that. I thought we'd be like, again, I did not think that we would be doing this, but like my point is, if you were lined up the list of people that have loud voices now, and I'd be like, okay, those people are gonna be in charge. Guess what? Ultra processed foods are going to be super mega demonized. Instead, they are, I don't know if they don't know this or not, but they are making fast food seem healthy. They are providing health halos to food that will never be healthy. And I'm not saying foods that you can never eat within the context of a balanced diet and still be healthy. I'm just saying foods that are low in nutrition, low in fiber and calories and micros and the things that people probably need to eat more of. So I just, I'm
So
very
high in calories, low in all the rest.
right. The high in calories and low there. So disappointed. If you had listed all those people, I would have expected, all right, man, I'm in for an appeal to nature in so far as like the actual foods returning to air quote nature, not the dye, the attempt to make the dye return back to nature. I was assuming we'd get a bit more of this, like, again, I guess I didn't assume that, but I just, if you had listed those names, you're like, what are those people have in common? Max Lugier's the Food Babes, the Courtney Swans, these people that have much louder, the Mercari's, I would have expected, oh, we're going to be just cracking down on ultra processed foods, like not cracking down on the dyes, but cracking down on the accessibility of them and the encouragement to eat more whole foods. And so I'm just like,
And the
I'll take that version.
removal of SNAP as well, right? Sorry to interrupt, but the
No, go
removal of
ahead.
SNAP as well. So for those who are less privileged financially, to also be even like to make it even harder for them to afford these healthier foods. Interesting that you point out the two names that you dropped there. Food Babe, I mean, she's whatever. To be honest with you, I'll candidly out there go, I just like, I don't care about her. I don't give. And Real Foodology, the Courtney Swan girl, they're just two girls that want their new bags. Like, I don't give a shit. I'm pretty diplomatic, and I don't like to ad hominem, but I don't trust that their intentions are what they say they are, given the fact that they'll contradict themselves at every single step along the way. Oh yeah, eat, and then when you argue it, which by the way, they both have me blocked, unsurprisingly. They when you bring up, arguments, and by the way, if you go to look at any of my videos where I introduce these people, especially if it's for the first, second, third, fourth video, the only real person I've ever ad hominemed is Paul Saladino. Everybody else is like, oh, I'm only talking about their argument. And the moment they make it about me, they make it about something else. They make it about, oh, well, I'm just saying eat healthy. No, you're not. You're saying, go eat this healthier version, which is $4 more. The problem is people like the silver bullets. They're really leaning into the silver bullets. They're great at sales, whether they want to call themselves salespeople or not. They are great. And a good salesperson, I think, by the way, this is my definition of it. A good salesperson is one who gets the sale and makes the person who bought the product think they got a good deal. So those, or a good experience, one of those two things. So that is what I call a good salesperson. You got a sale and you got the person to have a good experience and or feel like they got a good deal. So they do that very well with food. I don't think that, that those girls that they, that have the spotlight now, or the Means, the Casey Means and all of them, like they're very much financially incentivized through their businesses, levels and so on to get, which I'm sure we'll talk about later when we talk about my diabetes, but definitely financially incentivized to do what they're doing. So I understand why they are doing what they're doing. I never expected anything different from them. The Max Lugavere, which was an interesting one, because he is very closely tied to a lot of evidence-based creators. He's, if I'm not mistaken, fairly good friends with Alan Aragon, who I'm also, friendly with. I would love to call him a friend of mine. I don't know if he would refer to me as a friend too. He's the GOAT,
Same, by the
and
way. Same. He's been on the podcast. Alan and I have had wonderful, wonderful chats and have known each other virtually for a long time. So, yeah.
And same with Dr. Joe Zundel, a cancer biologist. So they're friendly, right? And largely prior to, you said prior to, if you pulled them aside. Yeah, I think his messaging prior to was like exactly that. Get rid of, ultra processed foods as much as possible and try to eat healthier whole foods. Candidly, I don't know what his messaging looks like now. I haven't
It's
seen him
still,
much.
if I may, it's still, it's kind of like the kid in school who is a good kid, but he's hanging out maybe with a little bit of the wrong crowd, and the teachers kind of know. They're like, this is a good kid, man. He's kind of just
Good
a little bit
analogy.
molding into the wrong crowd. And that's how I see Max and I go. When I say we go way back, I mean we've interacted quite a bit, and only recently did I not critique, but whatever. We had some messages back and forth of like him acknowledging that I was prior somebody who would have spoken very highly of him, and I just said to him, I said, "Hey, like your message probably is the same, but there it's also like the all right, maybe it's also like the bystander of the kid who's getting bullied,
Effect, yeah.
yeah." And so he's a little
Yeah.
bit of like he knows better, and is enjoying a bit of fame, I think. And so again, dude, I'm not like
Fair,
that's
yeah.
my take from it. The listener is allowed to decide whatever thing. I'm just letting you, this my mind's not the law, but it looks like that to me when I think of him. He feels like a person who I think has a good heart and is would genuinely want the best for people, but is also being pulled by fame and spotlight. So, and even just like the lack of speaking up over things that I suspect he knows don't, you know, he would align with a lot of what we're saying today. I find that rubs me a little bit the wrong way. He's not that's necessarily somebody I'd put on a most wanted poster in this regard, but he is somebody that popped into my mind, maybe out of like a, you know, he's the kind of
Recency
like,
bias,
yeah, but
perhaps.
it's also like, you know, I will just speak on personal that I had a period in my life where that was me, where I was hanging out with not the right people, and I had a teacher pull me aside and express disappointment in me, not angry. It was like disappointment because he or she at the time had expected better of me, and was like, "Hey, I expected better of you. Like, you know that that's wrong. You like I like the XYZ kid. Like, I might understand it, but like, I don't expect that from you." And that's how I feel about Max. And maybe that was like a trigger that came out, but that's not a holier than thou point of view either. If Max were sitting here right now, I think it would come out as if like I am some super mega righteous. You know, I don't want to come off that way. It's just my opinion on it. I just can't shake it.
Ultimately, you just disagreed with him on something. I think any mature listener, I'm sure there's lots of listeners that might not view it in a mature lens, but ultimately, like all of these things that we're saying anyways, I think I can speak for both of us and say, like, we're open to discourse. Like, I'm open to Max, you know, DMing me the moment after this goes out and being like, I think you're a fucking asshole. That's fine. If you think that I'm an asshole for saying my opinion, that's cool. I'm more than happy to hear your side of it. Just like the vegans are filling my, box now, is like, as long as it's a respectful dialogue, I have nothing against you. You got nothing against me. Ultimately, we should be trying to do the same thing here, is just try to make people healthier. We just have different roads that we want to use to get there. I might think that my car is the most efficient car to get there with, and maybe his car is more efficient than mine, but it is what it is. I think he's just stuck between a rock and a hard place, I think is the saying in English. So but unfortunately, to your point, even inaction or not speaking on things is an action and comes with some sort of consequences, which is being viewed by the evidence-based community like, huh, what are you doing? So anyway, I don't want to speak too much more on him or that. I don't know him at all, to be quite honest with you. So, and I don't want to put words in his mouth. So, but yeah, to kind of end that whole conversation off, I think it's naive to say that, and I'm not, neither of us, I know, but I'm sp speaking just for myself. I know that everything I say, because I just mentioned the vegan thing, is like, I know everything I say is not like correct, in the sense that normally when I put out a message on a video, on a reel, even then, it's not all the things that I say are 100% accurate. Sometimes there will be a degree of maybe I got some number fudged up. Usually I'll correct it on the video and you'll see it on the video. But like, let's say I don't have all the right things in the sense that you might not agree with everything because it affects me differently from how it affects you. So for the vegan conversation, like, I don't eat all plants. So that is obviously what pissed off the
You're a
vegans,
bad
is
person.
I'm a bad person. So and that's how they view people's morality, or their ethical compass. And so I don't match that. And that's okay for you to think that, by the way. I'm perfectly okay with you thinking that because I think other people are bad for, like, certain other things. I'm not even going to talk about it because it's going to make them hate me, but unnecessarily put a target on my back. But that's, everyone's a human. You don't need to love everyone, and that's why you only go out for beers with certain people. So, but I do think that there's many ways that maybe they could improve upon the way they're wasting their time and money and resources. Perhaps by maybe just sitting on their hands for the rest of this term would probably be better than what they're doing, but I don't know. That yeah, it
We
does definitely
can
impact
pivot
me.
to some diabetic chat.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
I
talk
would love.
about my lack of a functioning pancreas.
Right, I would love to talk about your shitty pancreas that doesn't work.
Fucking shit guy. Yeah.
Let's
Speaking of shit
talk.
guys.
I don't think I've had a type 1 diabetic on here, so let's do just a little
Oh,
backstory of
cool.
how this came into your life when you were diagnosed, how it's changed your life, and somewhere in there,
Yeah.
talk about non-diabetics wearing CGMs.
Oh. I mean, I hinted at it, I guess, a little earlier, but so I was diagnosed in 2009, October 16th. October 16th, it was a Friday, well, Thursday going on a Friday. And so I went for a doctor's appointment. So I'm going to give the I'll give the whole like I'll give the whole story, but try to make it abbreviated so that people know that I hear people go, oh my God, maybe I have diabetes, like all the time, when they read, their what do they call it, Google MD. They find some symptoms and like, oh my God, I'm probably diabetic. So when you develop diabetes, obviously you might not have all of these same symptoms, but for myself, what I had was frequency in urination. So I was peeing a lot. And when I say peeing a lot, people, that's the first one they go, oh my God, maybe I have diabetes. And I go, guys, like, trust me, you'll know. It's not like a, ooh, I peed like four extra times today. It's like a, you don't leave the bathroom, you're peeing, you're drinking water, peeing, drinking water, peeing, drinking water on loop till you go to sleep, till you're too tired. Then you wake up to pee like three times at night as well. So like it's quite extreme. And so I was also losing weight dramatically. So I weighed about 115 pounds at the time, maybe 120. I was already a super skinny kid. And then, 2 months later, end of after summer, I lost like, I was down to 82 pounds to the point where when I went to the doctor, they were like, oh, thinking, hey, son, are you not eating this and that? And thankfully, my parents were there. And I regularly go to the doctor and thankfully can do that. Privileged enough to say that I can do that. And so, it didn't end in an anorexia conversation. I mean, it existed, but my parents were like, no, we watch him eat. And oh, okay, well, is he, are you throwing up in the bathroom? No. And then they're like, okay. So then they tested my urine on that Thursday, when I went to the doctor again, because my mom was seriously concerned. Like I looked ghastly. I don't have any photos from that time in my life, unfortunately, but it was truly like it was a dark period of time, if I'm honest. And so, yeah, I went to the doctor's office. Everything seemed normal. I remember vividly. And that's why I got the shirt, not because I'm a big fan of Dr. Pepper, but I was drinking a Dr. Pepper on my way to that appointment. And I just felt like garbage, felt like a truck hit me. My eyes felt like they were bulging out of my head. And then, so, you do the urine sample, then you go downstairs. And they said, oh, okay, the doctor's in the office with me first before I go downstairs to get my blood work done. He says, we're going to ask you to get some blood work done. I said, okay, that's great. Why? And he goes, well, it could be one of three things. And I actually got to speak to my doctor when I went back to Toronto this past, because I'm family friends with him now, but after he's no longer my doctor. And his son is like one of my best friends. And so he goes, okay, so it could be one of three things. We found sugar in your urine. You could have pancreatic cancer, which would probably be the worst case. You could have diabetes, or it could be nothing. And that's kind of how he addressed it to me. And it was super blunt, like all doctors are. And I go, oh, sick. And so then I went, got the blood work done and thought nothing of it, went on. I had a test the next day. So I was like trying to study for that, I remember. And I was playing a lot of tennis at the time, but that day, because of the appointment, I couldn't go to tennis after school. So instead, I had the appointment. Then at 2 in the morning, they call. They're like, hey, get your kid to the hospital ASAP. My parents wake me up and take me to the hospital. The rest is history. I'm diagnosed with diabetes. It changed my life absolutely forever, because even before I got a degree in dietetics, food has never been just food. Food has always been a number. There's always an association of a number. How many carbs is in this? How many, like, people always think, oh my God, like, when people go, I don't want to develop a bad relationship with food, so I'm just never going to track. There's validity to that, not tracking sometimes. And maybe if you have a struggling relationship with food, but frankly, I didn't have a choice. And it does impact your relationship with food. Not having a choice, where there would be periods in my life where I would just not track. And that would not end well for me, because I would be high for days and then take too much insulin, overcorrect, and be low. And yeah, it changed my life dramatically. So now I see, food largely as a number all the time. And I'm constantly checking my phone. I got a CGM. It's telling me right now that I'm high, going even higher. So, but I took insulin before this. So before you guys panic, it will probably go down. It's just the stress of being on a call like this also raises my blood sugar. So yeah, it's just these little things that, like, you don't think about, that now makes you a little bit more sensitive to this,
Was there a
both as a
point early
person.
on, maybe? Sorry to cut through you. Was there a
No,
point early
you're
on where
good.
your brain? I have a family friend, and I remember it was back when I was personal training in the gym, and he was very young. He was like 10.
Sure.
This is when he was going through that. And so right after that had happened, I hadn't seen him for a few years, but I heard through the grapevine, through his mother, et cetera, that he was just struggling with the view of carbohydrates being bad because they now cause him to think so much and just generally almost like blurred the line of like, hey, just because this is something you have to focus on doesn't mean those things are bad for you. Did you ever struggle with like, hey, just because I have to manage my carbohydrate and thus my insulin, that doesn't make those things bad for me? They're just a thing I have to manage. Did you struggle with that?
So, such a great question. Never been like formally asked that in any capacity. And I think that's a great talking point. When you go through it all, the easiest, I was in that position. I was 14 at the time, keep in mind. So I was like going through puberty. And so for me, it was like, oh, whatever, just forget this, screw this, like do whatever I need to do. Just keep it in the back of my mind. Don't really think about it. Live normal, try to be normal. And keep in mind, I played, a competitive level of tennis. So I'm already the weird kid. I'm already the kid that's like
Yeah, I played tennis, man.
barely
Tennis is a
at
great sport.
school.
Great sport.
I got all the, the hazing of like, you're a play pussy sport, whatever, whatever. I digress. I love tennis. But, back then it's like you're leaving school for tournaments or whatever. So I already had that like target on my back in terms of I wasn't the normal kid. So I didn't want to have another target on my back being not normal as kids do at that age. So, but when that started happening, my parents would be the constant voice in the back of my head. And God bless my mom. She obviously just wanted the best for me, but it was always just nagging me, nagging me, nagging me about like carbs, this and that. And yeah, it became like carbs are bad. If it wasn't for tennis and where I could directly have evidence to show my parents, specifically my mom, but my parents in general, like, hey, yes, carbs are bad, but I am one donut away from death if I'm playing tennis,
Yep.
AKA, if I go
Interesting.
low and I don't have the sugar, I will literally pass out on the court. And that happened. So, not to say that it was that moment. For me, it was never that moment, but maybe for my parents, me like passing out was the moment they realized, like, oh, we can't be so binary about this. We can't just be carbs equals bad. So, while that didn't translate to everything that they learned about, it definitely was like the thing that helped them learn that. Maybe not all things are just in a nutrition space, at least, are just this equals good, this equals bad. It wasn't that black and white. Because again, right, with carbs, like, yes, if I'm drinking this Gatorade, for example, and I do nothing all day, and sure, like maybe that's like just a useless waste of calories. But if I'm on a court and my blood sugar is going low and I drink it, that is the difference between not only me performing well, but me passing out and having to quit. So yeah, it was quite that would be, I guess, the general. I don't know that there was like an exact moment, but it took probably 3 or 4 years even to get to that point, which is a lot. But I'm grateful for diabetes in many ways because it gave me a platform to teach people, which is what got me into dietetics and got me into learning about nutrition and then communicating it online in general.
I think you make a good point about it probably happens very quickly where you're like, oh, this is bad because I can't manage, let's say, my carbohydrate intake. But then like in the same breath, you're like, yeah, but carbs are also essential to me not having a different negative outcome. And so in one moment, you're like, ah, whenever I eat carbs, I got it causes me extra work. And then on the flip side, you're like, thank God I had that honey packet or whatever. Honey might even not be the best plan because it's like kind of low glycemic, but you might like, thank God I had that candy on me or whatever. Like, so right there's that, okay, that dual kind of carbohydrates can occupy both a thing now that I adds work to my life that I have to manage, but also a thing that are like super duper crucial, like you said, not passing out on the court. So that's interesting.
Talking about choices of it is like, sure, honey is natural and I could keep a packet of honey. Honey would definitely bring my blood sugar up like fast enough. Definitely not as fast as like an orange juice or something, but let me give you a scenario, right? And one that happens to me often. You're flying. So you go flying and you're on an airplane. You're maybe an overnight flight, so they shut everything down. The stewardesses are like non-responsive and it's all dark. You don't want to bother anyone. What do you bring on a plane? You can't bring Gatorade. I can't nor like now you they're okay with it. Sometimes I can, but even so, let's say you can't bring a Gatorade, or you feel weird because it's a liquid. Sure, you can't bring Gatorade onto a plane. What do you bring? Well, are you gonna bring honey and then you're like fucking sticky and shit afterwards? Like,
What do you do
it
with the
is.
honey, dog? No,
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
exactly. Like,
Just
yeah, what
kidding.
do you
I'm
like?
just
Somebody
kidding.
wakes up and sees you doing
Yeah.
that. And
Just like
you may
sticky
think
hands.
it's super easy right now for the person listening to this going, well, Eden, it's life or death. Yeah, but it doesn't look like it from the outside. I still, like, I'm not fucking seizing up. I literally look like this. So if you see me start like pounding back a Gatorade full speed or getting honey down like this or sugar packets or whatever it is that you think would be the healthier alternative, like just pounding down dates, you know, like
Yeah, dates with butter in. Hold
what
on.
do you th
I'm just kidding.
yeah,
Bad
exactly,
idea.
exactly. And it's like, and it, but especially for that case.
Yes.
But like, you know, that is also something you think about, right? That's a trade-off. It's like, whereas no one will bat an eye, usually if I bring out candy, maybe they will. Maybe they'll be like, whoa, what's this big guy eating candy for? What the hell? Like, and then it'll start a conversation usually. But like, again, practically speaking, their candy's easy to carry. I don't have to like go wash my hands after. Maybe, you know, that's an issue for me. But yeah,
Does
those
it?
like little things that you don't think about, I think about 100 times over
Yeah.
before I make one choice. So it's something that is, you know, the freedom to make food decisions is such a privilege in every way, regardless of diabetes or not. Like to be able to just go buy something without thinking about the price, that's a privilege, right? Like to so I like to remind people is like could always have it worse, myself included, right? Myself included on that one.
Part of me get just talking about it gets me even more fired up about, like, let's say, combating disinformation about, let's say, carbohydrate insulin model of obesity, which, like, TLDR, like, you know, well, actually, there's a lot to that, but, like, even just things like the fear mongering around micromanaging, like, post meal blood sugar excursions, you know, and I get just even saying that, like, if I, for some reason, and I'd like to hear from you because you of course, would be the person to ask, and that's why I'm asking you. But do you get like, do you even more mad when people are like just misunderstanding carbohydrates and insulin and their role in health? Do you almost like take it personally? You're like, how dare you, with a functioning pancreas, fucking worry about a normal blood sugar excursion after eating? Like, I don't know if that's a like a memification of a real experience, or has
Yeah.
that is that a, something that lives in you?
I, you know, if I'm honest, maybe my outward reaction doesn't seem like I'm a, I don't know. I'd like to think I'm pretty chill. While
Yeah, you
yes,
don't
I'm
get
pretty
angry.
passionate,
No,
but
you don't get angry. Yeah.
I
Yeah.
don't think I get too angry about
No, I
things,
don't.
but I will say I immediately see the humor in it.
Yes,
And
that's
I'll be
fair.
like, you know, I'll be like, it's kind of funny how this is something I actually have to live through, and you're like choosing to create this problem for yourself. But at the same time, it's like somebody genuinely believes it. I'll try my best to walk them off that ledge, so to speak, and try to educate them. But if they're like one of those people that doesn't want to have a conversation and they would rather just say what they believe and what they believe is dogma, then like, cool. Then I just sit there and kind of laugh and giggle. You know, it's just cool. If you think that, you know, your blood sugar spike after your meal, which is completely normal and will come back down, if you think that's problematic for you and you should completely change all of your food-related decisions as a result of that, then that's cool. I'm not going to waste my energy talking to you about it. That's kind of how I feel about it, to be
What do you
honest.
think about type 1 diabetics who see a low carb diet as a way of, or we could just say type 1 diabetics adopting a low carb diet at all? My presumption is that one would do that because there's a notion that by doing that, by eating less carbs, I will require less insulin, and for some reason that is a good idea. Have you encountered that line of thinking?
Yeah, I always, yeah, that's always one of those. It depends. I've definitely encountered that line of thinking a lot, especially most notably from the people that are trying to dismiss somebody's struggle. So, for example, I'll be talking to a family. This is the most, it's not the type 1 diabetic, it's the parent of the type 1 diabetic,
Nice.
is where it always kind of happens, right? It's the parent of the type 1 diabetic who's like, a lower carb diet would be better, right? Tell them, or like they're
Oh,
like trying to get
brutal.
me to like get the kid. Yeah, it's a really awkward
But is the
situation.
idea, is there, do you think there's some sort of scientific backing there, or is this a convenience thing of like, oh, I have less blood sugar spikes, I have less insulin management to do, or do these people under the assumption that there's some sort of health benefit here?
A little bit of both. I think there's definitely a halo effect around it, but I think it depends on how low they classify low. So that's the first part that kind of matters. I'm like, what do you see as low? The moment they have like a no idea, then I'm like, okay, let's move away from this. Let's walk off that ledge. But like, if you think about it, a high protein diet is innately reducing the amount of carbs, right? So there is definitely scientific backing behind that. And will you consume less? Will you need less insulin? Potentially depends on what your total caloric intake is, because remember, protein, even if I were to eat a meal of only protein, like look, I didn't have a meal here and I had insulin and my blood sugar is still going up because of stress. Because I'm, candidly, for all of you listening at home, I get nervous when I go on to these calls or when I go on to even calls with my clients. So it makes my blood sugar go up and I didn't even have anything. So there's a lot of factors that influence whether or not you have to take exogenous insulin and whether or not you have a spike in insulin. Protein does have an insulinogenic, or rather, a blood glucose response. It does. It's just different in how it spikes compared to carbs. So will you have to take less insulin? Yeah, about a third less, more or less. But that's because of a lot of things, the thermogenic effect of proteins, et cetera. And also because, maybe if you are one of those people that walks after their meals, well then great. Maybe you'll be able to actually lower blunt the spike of that protein because it's so slow in spiking anyways. So yeah, for sure. There is definitely some science to back it, but to a limit, like to an extent. Doing like a carnivore diet defeats the purpose because they pretend, and this I've seen this, they pretend that a carnivore or keto diet is like, do this equals zero protein, or sorry, equals zero insulin for the rest of your life. Do it now. Dude, are you kidding me? For the Americans that can't afford insulin, for some Canadians also, I mean, it's subsidized, but it's not free. Some Canadians also who just want to never take an injection again. You got to remember, guys, like I'm terrified of needles. I have to take them every day. So it's like, it's not one of those like, ah, you're fine, you're used to it, whatever, fuck you. We talked about it yesterday, me and Jesse. Like, I'm still scared of needles. I just have to make that decision in my head of like, okay, die or don't die. Forgive the bluntness, and we'll have to bleep that for the social media. But like, yeah, it's unalive or alive. That's how I have to view things. And so that's I know it's quite a very simplistic approach, perhaps, but yeah, there is definitely some science to a higher protein, lower carb model. But perhaps, and obviously paired with, strength training and cardiovascular training. But otherwise, I would say to an extent, you still need your, 130 grams plus, like any other human would.
On the topic of, let's say, non-diabetics wearing a continuous glucose monitor, I probably am less bothered by it in a bubble. And I'll preface by giving my opinion, and I'm curious on your opinion. Like, to me, it's like every other data collection, right? It's like wearing a Garmin and checking your HRV. Like, if you can understand what to do and what not to do with that information, then it's just data. And you can act on it accordingly, which is to say, potentially, having a like it doesn't acknowledging that it doesn't mean everything, or within the context of everything else, it doesn't mean very much. Like there, I don't. If I was to wearing a CGM, I personally would find it interesting, because and I wouldn't be like, oh, I had a potato, it spiked my blood sugar. I guess I'm not eating that. Like that wouldn't be like that is my fear of regular people wearing CGMs, as they will now avoid foods that spike their blood sugar as if that is moving towards better health. The super big irony is like if you have a continuous glucose monitor on one arm and a continuous triglyceride monitor on the other arm, if you're like, oh, I'm not eating potatoes anymore, and you ultimately end up going towards more ketogenic, higher fat, like what if you just wore a continuous triglyceride monitor as just monitoring fat in your blood postprandially or after you eat? I just find that to be a misuse of an otherwise, a tool is just a tool, right? So I inherently am not bothered if a person who doesn't have diabetes wears a CGM. I am highly interested in what their thoughts are as to what they're going to do with that information, and find that on average, people have a misunderstanding of what to do with that information. But I'm slightly less bothered about it in general. More, you can see there's a vein in my neck that's coming out. I'm more vein
Mine's in
in
my
the
forehead,
neck.
don't worry.
Yeah, I'm more vein in the neck about what somebody's going to go and ultimately do with that information. So I'd love to hear your take and if you feel it's been affected at all by your experience.
Yeah, first of all, me wearing a CGM, game changer in my life.
Oh, fucking game
Absolutely.
changer.
I was game
Unbelievable game
changer.
changer.
I can't express to you how many bloody napkins and how many times testing your blood sugar, and then you
Fuck
get your
yeah.
finger bloody and it doesn't work, and then you got to do it another time and it's painful, and then you got holes in your fingers, and I still have to do that from time to time with the finger pokes, but there's nothing more like socially awkward than being someone who is already socially awkward and making people who fear blood uncomfortable in public just to, do a quick checkup 5 or 6 to 8 times a day, and even more on a tennis court. And then on a tennis court, you're sweating buckets, so then you get an error and then you're wasting money. Anyway, that's a whole rabbit hole. Game changer. All right. That's all I'll say is a game changer. If you're diabetic, if you know, I guess. Context is very important here. I don't mind. I don't have a visceral reaction to it, maybe is a better way of saying, because I do mind. I think about the US and there was like a shortage at one point. And you think about all the people that now could not get them because Levels had bought up all of them. And this is now forever going to ruin my chances of getting a Levels sponsorship. But here we go. I think they are a waste of time for someone who's non-diabetic. The reason why I think that is because it gives you largely non-actionable advice. And I say largely because unless you are type 2 diabetic and you just found this out because of this Levels monitor, because you were out of range like the whole time, or whatever glucometer you end up using, if you were out of range the whole time, that might show you a problem you didn't know you had, which is great. And I think actually they've done a great job of using those to help increase diagnosis, like from a diagnostic level. However, I don't mind as much because usually it's some random like tech bro or fintech bro who wants to just like optimize every aspect of his fitness. And he's not even like doing the basic shit, like don't drink. Yeah, obviously you can have drinks from time to time, but you know what I mean? They're like doing coke, drinking a shit ton and having wild weekends all the time. And then they're only really doing CrossFit like 3 times a week. And so they want to maximize everything. So for that person, I'm like, that's just an absolute waste of your time and money. But to them, it's $200, whatever, it doesn't matter. Because that leads to my next point. They don't do it for a long period of time. I think the person that I will blanket, I'll put a blanket statement on this. I think the person that wears one more than once or more than 2 or 3 times, like wears it regularly, that's non-diabetic, they are undoubtedly an idiot. I will fully put that out there because it's giving you information that, as you said, it's interesting. It is interesting. And that's why I'm not offended by it. I'm not, I don't have a visceral reaction because who am I to say, like that's like me getting upset, or that's like you getting upset at me for putting a blood pressure monitor on. Like I'm young. I don't have heart disease, whatever. Like, but I wanted to test my blood pressure. Like, well, who am I to get mad at you for wanting to know what, how, blood sugar spikes work? Like, that's cool information. Why would you mind? So for that, I don't mind. I think it's largely informative. I do also understand that sometimes people will make decisions off of something that's not actionable, and not actionable meaning if your blood sugar spikes because you eat a food, that doesn't really do anything. That doesn't mean anything. So don't change your dietary habits. So anyways, that's kind of how I feel on that. I think if it's short term, cool, test it out. If it's long term, don't be dumb.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that there's a separate discussion there of like, am I taking this away from somebody who needs it more? I think that's super valid
Yeah.
logic to consider. And if that is the case, then yes, don't be dumb.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, not to rope back in our public health chat, but like, what's her face? Like, also made all of her money stopping our Surgeon General. Owns a company that sells CGMs to non-diabetics, and it's just kind of
The
like
one that I
this is,
was referring to, yeah,
yeah,
Levels,
this is
yeah.
a weird. That's like a weird. Weird is the wrong word, and I'm going to just hold back more worse language in this one context. Okay. Before we let you out of here, I like to do a couple stock questions that I just think are a little bit fun. And so we're going to do a little rapid fire, not really rapid fire, but we can go in. We got a
Yeah,
couple of
keep it
minutes here.
short.
Keep none of your fucking rabbit holes that you've been going down.
Sorry, man. Sorry.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Let's do things you do that you think have some sort of positive effect, but are currently not, don't have a whole host of evidence beside, but behind them. Things that you're kind of, that you're like, you're doing that thing where somebody else might do it, where they think, hey, this snake oil thing doesn't have a lot of research behind it, but I believe in it. But maybe you actually do. Like, is there a thing out there? I always say my answer. My listeners will know what my answer is, and it's wearing blue light blockers at night. And so blue light blockers at night,
Cool.
like just like not like unbelievable systematic
And
review
you
of
also, I can
RCTs.
see it.
And
You have it on your glasses as well. You have the lens,
the tint, mostly from
the
like I
tint.
stare at a computer for fucking 16 hours a day, so that's just like a for eye
Fair
sore, for
enough.
eye strain. But like dark amber glasses at night, because I think
Okay.
it anecdotally makes me feel like the light I'm taking in is less stimulative. But hey, no amazing
Sure.
research. But if you ask me, if my client's like, hey, I'm not sleeping well, I might mention that. What is there
Sure,
something in your
sure.
life that you're like, I do that? You know, I don't.
Yeah.
I won't give you any other bad ideas,
Yeah,
but.
no, you're good. I would say like a first thought is I do a lot of hard shit. I just th find that it makes me feel good, like doing stupid shit. Like people are always like, "Oh, why'd you do 100K steps in one day?" I felt like it. You know, I did a marathon from my work desk. Like I have a walking pad under here, and I did that one time. And people always go, "Why?" I go, "I didn't even do that for a video. I just fucking did it." Like I don't know. I just like to do hard shit. It makes me feel. It's for that chip on my shoulder, I think, ultimately, about diabetes. But I like to do hard shit. The other thing, maybe more specifically, is like drop sets. I know you're not supposed to like are not supposed they're not like really evidence-based or not very efficient, but they just fucking feel nice. So I like drop sets
The
sometimes
irony
for
is actually
specific
drop sets.
exercises.
The irony is drop sets like actually have good evidence. It's the science-based bro who would say that you're dumb, but the actual person who's going to bring like a PubMed article would find drop set articles that are saying that drop sets are actually an efficient way. But yes, that is, I know your answer coming from someone who's like, yeah, like I probably bet that on average that drop set isn't just a net addition of a single set, but yeah, I'm with you on that.
Exactly. It's definitely not that, but it's like it's my way of, because I'm it's a mental battle of getting to close to failure. And if I, you know, stayed at that weight, would I get there? Probably not. But so I keep dropping the weight to just kind of inch myself closer to that failure point. And it, you know, anecdotally, again, it works. Not that I recommend it to everyone. I definitely don't recommend it to anyone, really. But yeah, it's just something I like. So if I'll sometimes bring it up as like as you said, it's my experience. So
Sweet. Flip side of
yeah.
that discussion is something that you absolutely know is good for people that you would recommend to others, but you yourself either don't do at all or struggle with or could do better.
One thing that comes to mind is like making sure that my blood sugar is perfect all the time. And so I can't go out and say like, oh, let your blood sugar go to, I mean, you guys have different measurements. So let's say like 200 milligrams per deciliter, however you guys m measure it. Yours is like 200 would be high. For me, 16 would be very high. Like, whoa, that's crazy. But for me, I intentionally do that before a long run or a tennis match because I know my blood sugar is going to drop. So can I recommend that largely to people? No. And sometimes I'll say it in a video that I'm like, that I'm doing this. And that definitely has zero scientific backing, because the scientific back, you know, scientific backing is keep your blood sugar in check, you know, in range. But if I keep it in range, I cannot eat fast enough to replenish all of the losses. So, that's kind of one thing, maybe, I guess, if that counts. The other thing is like regularly tracking my workouts.
That's a good one, yeah.
I don't regularly, like, I do track. I follow a plan, do the plan, get it done. Some like, am I like writing it in every time? No. And that's just because I track so many other things. It's one of those things where I'm saving my energy. I know my numbers, and you know, sometimes I know when I'm dogging it or whatever, because I periodically will track it and be like, okay, we're a little off here. So every 2 or 3 weeks I'll enter it in. But I largely don't do it all the time. So
I
that would be
think,
another thing probably.
I mean, listen, your muscles don't know the logbook. They just know, well, you know, tension
Exactly.
and close to failure and hard sets. And
Yeah.
I think if you've been doing
Stimulus,
this as
yeah.
long, as long as you or I have been doing it, I could, like, the point of tracking your workouts is to limit, is to increase the or maximize the percentage of quality sessions and quality sets. Like on one hand, if you just were to intuitively push yourself, where would you be in 5 years? Versus if you had the data that was like, oh man, I did 100 pounds for 10 last time. Shit. And that person who's logging it, you'd bet on a person starting at
I'd put
day
my
one.
money on them.
Totally. But I
Put my
think
money on
me
them.
right now today, I think I could get a very high percentage of quality sessions without tracking. Because even if I was messing up with the weight selection and I get into the set and I'm like, shit, man, I'm on rep number three and I can already tell this is going to be more reps or less reps than I want, I can still roughly approximate the how close I want to go to failure. And not perfectly, but close enough that by the end of that workout, I'm like, cool, an additive session here for sure.
That's how I view it. And for me, ultimately, I do it to turn off, separate myself from the world a little bit, which is why I don't really film anything in the gym, which annoys my followers a lot. So I'm sorry, guys, in advance. But that's kind of why I don't do it all the time. But again, why I still do it is to at least be that person that periodically checks in and be like, okay, should I be moving more? Or where's my strength at, relatively speaking? Or yeah, to your point, it's like if I grabbed a weight that was maybe too light, the weight selection isn't good. I'll adjust the maybe the amount of reps on the fly, right? Like maybe I'll
For
just
sure.
rip out 12 instead of or 15 instead of 8, whatever it
Oh,
is.
15, bro. How are you gonna recover from that? You'll be in some sort of calcium ion coma
Just
for
I'll be in a
the
coma, exactly. I'll just be comatose for the rest of the workout. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll take an extra minute on my recovery. And then, dude, I know I'll be just scrolling, working my thumbs.
Nuts. All right, dude, let's wrap it up. Tell people where they can find you. It's been super, super fun getting to know you. You have an awesome account, by the way. My listeners, if
For
you
sure.
trust me at all, like go follow Ed and he's fantastic. You're doing a great job, dude.
I appreciate it. At Evidence Nutrition on all platforms. Trying to do a little bit more on YouTube nowadays. So any support I can get there, comments, words of encouragement, criticisms, that'd be great on YouTube. But on Instagram and TikTok as well. And then if you're looking for coaching or anything, obviously you're in the right spot with your coach over there. But if you're looking for that kind of thing, it's edinsahovicnutrition.com.
Sweet, sweet man. All right, dude. Thanks for coming on. Super, super great getting to know you,
Appreciate
dude.
it. Sorry for prolonging it so long, and we didn't really get through everything, but that's the name of the game sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, sure. No problem, man.
Ho
I
hopefully n
love that we
nap
derailed.
time. Yeah. It. I mean, hope I think it's a little bit more natural, conversational. People will get the emotion behind it, so it'll be good.
Oh yeah. I'm not cutting a thing. I'm super happy with where the conversation went. I think that there's more value in that. And I'm happy we let it go where it naturally went.
Perfect.
Cool,
Thanks,
man.
dude.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.